on 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now. Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Yes, a very big thank you to both Roz and Emma for another entertaining afternoon driving us through this afternoon on Thursday the 30th of June. I'm Shane Dawson and you're listening to Game On. Coming up this evening over the course of the next hour, as the Irish team is named to face the All Blacks, Mike Ross is live in studio as we ask, are Andy Farrell's men prepared for Eden Park on Saturday?
Yeah, I think probably the way we train, there's quite a bit of unstructured stuff, so it's sort of inherently unpredictable at times, and I think the longer we train like that, the more instinctive we get with each other, but there's still variation in what we're doing, so I think we're getting hopefully the best of both there.
We're live to Mount Juliet very shortly to hear how day one fared for the Irish at the Irish Open down in Kilkenny. And in basketball, we check in with the Irish national team ahead of their Eurobasket pre-qualifier in Austria.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, they're a very talented team with a lot of players playing high level across Europe, as well as obviously Jakubowicz playing in the NBA. So yeah, it's not just a case of keying in on one guy. They'll be very big, very physical. It'll be kind of a case of keying in on multiple players as opposed to just the one guy.
Plus, in association football, we'll find out how the Irish side fared at the first ever UEFA Unity Euro Cup. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can do so by texting us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Yes, hello there. It is great to have your company on this Thursday evening. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of this evening's show, just a couple of news headlines. Starting in Wimbledon, Katie Bolter produced the biggest win of her career by upsetting Wimbledon finalist Karolina Pliskova on centre court to reach a third round of a Grand Slam. For the first time, she thrilled the home crowd by coming from a set down to win 3-6, 7-6, 6-4. In soccer, Ireland under-19 international Jad Hakiki has extended his contract with Shelburne until the end of 2020. The 18-year-old attacking midfielder broke into the club's Premier Division team this season. He has made 7 appearances and also made a breakthrough into the Ireland under-19 side, a proud product of the Shelburne FC Academy. And former Manchester United and Chelsea chief executive Peter Kenyon is leading a bid to buy Everton. The PA news agency understands they hope to have a takeover completed by the 21st of July. So a couple of news headlines there. We will be crossing to Greg Allen very, very shortly, but Mike Ross is live in studio. Mike, we will be chatting rugby in detail very shortly, but I suppose briefly, what have you made of the Irish team? Are you full of confidence and full of positivity ahead of Saturday?
Of course I am. Absolutely, Shane. Yeah, I think it's a good team. Looking through the pack they've picked, you've got a good selection of poachers in there. Peter Manny's in there. You know, Ty Byrne, Josh Van der Fleer. So it looks like they're going to try and pressure a very mobile pack. So they're going to try and pressure the All Blacks at the ruck and move the ball around a bit. I mean, the front row pretty much picks itself. But and then in the backs, you know, you've got Sexton back in harness and Jameson Gibson Park and James.
Plenty
Lowe.
Of experience.
Yeah, bit of experience in there. So yeah, look, the Maori game wasn't the best start to the tour. I think there's a lot of young guys, you know, their first time in an Irish jersey, trying to force things a little bit. And like, I watched that game on Monday morning, and really, what happened to them? They were competitive for 60 minutes, but it's that 20 minutes that they weren't that really cost them.
Exactly. Well, it will be interesting to see, and we're going to keep that positivity, hopefully. I'm going to feed off that, and we're going to have our chat on rugby in a few moments' time. But for now, I'm going to welcome Greg Allen into the conversation because, similar to yesterday, Greg is live down in Kilkenny on day one today of the Irish Open. Greg, how has day one gone for yourself?
Well, I'm certainly entertained by the amount of birdies that have been fired in today. And this was slightly predictable. When we saw the overnight rain, professional golfers at this level, they like soft golf courses. It means the ball stops where they intended to stop. I thought that there might be a lot of birdies. I really didn't anticipate a scenario whereby we have around 100 players under par figures, and there are 156 in the field. And that is the level of hot scoring on this golf course. And, you know, Mount Juliet, when it was designed and opened in the early 1990s, 30 years ago, it really was a long golf course at 7,200 yards. And now it's not a short golf course, but it's not a long golf course. And when it's soft, it does play longer. But these players, they hit it so far that once they have that point and shoot conditions of soft greens, they can really rip it up. And it has been to some degree. Ryan Fox is the leader here on 8 under par after a round of 64. And there's going to be a rugby theme to this interview that I'm going to play you with right now, because Ryan Fox, as many people will know, is the son of Grant Fox. And Grant Fox is an All Black legend. He was an out half who was capped around 45 times or thereabouts, and he scored more than 600 points. A wonderful place kicker and a fine player as well. And Ryan Fox, actually, after his round of 64, he's a player, incidentally, who was runner-up to Russell Knox in the Irish Open at Ballyliffin in 2018, and he was fourth the previous year at Port Stewart. So he really likes the Irish Open. So before I get into the Irish, let's hear from Ryan Fox, not just about his round, but also about the match that's coming up on Saturday.
I was really happy. I was really patient today because it really didn't feel that good early. I had a couple of, not poor shots, but average shots early, and got up and down from a couple of places, and which kept the round going. And then all of a sudden something clicked on 17 and I kind of didn't miss a shot from there, to be honest. And, you know, it just shows how important patience is in golf. You know, I could have got frustrated a little early and, you know, maybe turn that round into two or three under, and you know, just to let it happen and not make mistakes, and you know, then to all of a sudden sort of get hot through that middle period of the round, or you know, turn what was a, you know, looking like an average round into a really, really good round.
Just about the match on Saturday, because obviously you would like to be out late enough to be able to watch the match and get out and play and probably be in the final group. That's the situation you find yourself in. Your father Grant is a legend, and he's obviously still part of the New Zealand selectors. Tell me your own feelings. What are Ireland going to face?
Not sure what Ireland are going to face, to be honest, because I don't think we know what our team's going to be until it runs out on the park on Saturday. I think we've, you know, I think both teams have been hit by COVID a little bit. I think we're still dealing with that on our side of the world, and not doing all the testing. So I think for both teams, it's just going to be you know, hopefully get enough people fit and enough you know, top players fit to put on a good show. And I know most of our coaching staff is down as well, so I think the guys will probably just play it pretty simple. We've always been traditionally a little rusty first game of the year, and probably wouldn't expect anything different this time. But we're also at Eden Park, which I don't think we've lost there for touch wood. We haven't lost there for a long time, and I think we're all, you know, always pretty tough to beat there. So I think it'll be a hard road for the Irish team, but you know, you guys have been playing pretty well the last few years, and I think have got us the last two times we've played, right? So I think we might be up for a little bit of revenge as well, but I expect it to be a pretty entertaining game.
So that's Ryan Fox, the leader here on 8 under par after that 64, talking both golf and rugby, and just about the fact that Grant Fox is still in the New Zealand setup. We did hear that Joe Schmidt was, I think, to replace Grant Fox among the New Zealand selectors in the back room. But such is the COVID situation in the All Blacks camp that Grant Fox, apparently, according to Ryan, his son, is still very much involved heading into Saturday's test. So anyway, that's the leader, Ryan Fox. Brilliant round. One front nine of 30 strokes, which was his back nine to shoot that 64. One stroke clear of the Frenchman Frédéric Lacroix on 7 under par. He had two eagles on his back nine in a round of 65. And then in the bunch on 66 is Tristan Lawrence of South Africa, who was first off this morning. And he set the pace at 66, subsequently only overtaken by Lacroix at 65 and Fox at 64. So the Irish, you actually have to go outside the top 20 to find the first of the Irish. And that's an indication of just how hot the scoring has been, because actually two good rounds, 4 under par, 68s, only good enough for tied for 21st place, by the way, by Seamus Power and also for Niall Carney. And for Power, you know, who's just been so consistent this year, this was really what you'd expect from Power, a 68 in the first round of an Irish Open. That's pretty almost Power for Power's course these days. He did have two back nine bogeys on par 5, so he must have felt that at least a 66 escaped him. But this was his assessment afterwards. He's only 4 off the lead after a round of 68. Seamus Power.
Yeah, pretty good overall. You know, I did a lot of good things today, which was nice. My aim is kind of very close to where I wanted. Like, I know where, if I'm going to miss, I know where it's going to go. And that, so it makes things a lot easier to kind of get yourself around the course. So I was able to do that, made a couple of putts obviously the one in the last was a huge bonus. But yeah, a lot of good things. You know, those sixes will kind of annoy me for the next couple of hours. But besides that, it was a lot of good stuff.
Some Irish players come here and they play in an Irish Open and they feel the expectation of the crowd. You had a massive gallery around you, built as the morning went on. It was like the final day crowd. But you just stay in your own business zone, don't you? You're very good at that.
Yeah, no, I mean, you try to. I mean, you're still only doing, the game doesn't change, which is obviously all I try to remind myself. You know, it might be more people or less people, but you're still, you know, you're trying to visualize the shot and you're trying to hit better shots. And that's what I was kind of focused on. But yeah, it was very comfortable. It's nice seeing familiar faces in the crowds too. I think that helps as well.
And just about the fact that you're about 20 miles from the Waterford border.
Yeah.
And obviously as well that this is, come Sunday, if you were in contention, it would be a huge thing. Do you even let yourself think that that's possible after a 68?
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal at the start of the week, you know, to put yourself in those spots. But, you know, it's one round, is 36 holes to go before you get near Sunday. So, I mean, I need a lot of birdies to kind of keep myself going in that. But that's the plan. The preparation was set up in a way to put myself in a position on Sunday, and that's not going to change after round one.
So that's Seamus Power around a 68, and Niall Carney from Royal Dublin around a 68 as well. Carney, incidentally, 159th on the European Order of Merit, but he's only had around five or six starts this season. He is playing exceptionally consistently and well, Niall Carney. He just needs to get a chance, I think, to really be a player on the European Tour. He's found his game, I think, but COVID has affected his progress as he's emerged as a strong player over the last year. And a good weekend here with this much prize money, 5.7 million. Could really change Niall Carney's life, that round of 68 for him today, matched by Seamus Power. Rounds of 70 for John Murphy from Kinsale, who's here on an invitation from the sponsors, and also for Porter Carrington, who could have actually had a lower round. He was 3 under playing the last, but bogeyed that. So a round of 70 for Porter Carrington, the US Seniors Open champion from last Sunday. 71s for Shane Lowry, who played alongside Seamus Power today, and also for Jonathan Caldwell, a 71. And rounds of level par 72 for Paul Dunn, and also the amateur from down the road in Kilkenny Golf Club, Mark Power. He shot 72. And on the course, Cormac Sharvin is level after 13. So that's the picture in round one, which is drawing to a conclusion. It's still a good half an hour or so to go here before play is concluded. Ryan Fox, the leader, on 8 under par, 1 stroke clear of Frederic Lacroix of France, who's 7 under after a 65. And the best of the Irish are Niall Carney and Seamus Power, 4 under after 68s.
Greg Allen, gentlemen, as always, thank you very much. A very concise roundup of day one there, and we will be checking in with Greg Allen tomorrow evening, and hopefully we have some Irish contenders in the top 20 when we check in with Greg once more. But I'm loving the rugby angle because that sets us up perfectly, because in a few moments' time I'll be going back to Mike Ross and we're going to be chatting in detail Ireland versus New Zealand. So do stay with us here on 2FM.
RTE 2FM. On 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game on.
Rugby.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On, and a very rugby-themed Game On, even with our golf segment at the start with Greg Allen, who was chatting to the Irish Open leader, who's the son of a legendary All Black. But I'm with a former legendary Ireland international, Mike Ross, live in studio. And Mike, we briefly mentioned the team that was announced that will face New Zealand on Saturday morning, of which you can hear live commentary on a special edition of Game On here in 2FM. So for those that didn't see the team, Peter O'Mahony has been given the nod over Jack Conan in Ireland's back row for Saturday's first test against the All Blacks in Auckland. In the back line, Keith Earls has won the race for the number 14 shirt, with a 34-year-old starting on the right wing just 3 days on from playing the full 80 minutes against the Maori All Blacks. Jordan Larmour has failed to make the match day 23 with Bundy a key preferred as the extra backline sub. There are a couple of surprising calls on the bench, with Keane Healy, who has somehow made a Lazarus-like recovery, seemingly past fit to play despite being carted off with that ankle injury in Wednesday's defeat to the Maori, while Kieran Treadwell is named as a second row replacement ahead of Ryan Baird, and the rest of the squad is as expected, really, with 10 of the starting lineup from November's win against New Zealand named in the starting 15. So it's Keenan, Earls, Ringrose, Henshaw, Lowe, Sexton, Gibson, Park, and then your forwards starting with Ivra Hayne, Andrew Porter, Dan Sheehan, Furlong, Tadhg Byrne, James Ryan, Peter O'Mahony, Josh van der Fleer, Caelan Doris, and then all of your replacements, Heffernan, Beelam, Healy, Treadwell, Conan, Murray, Carberry and Bunyaki. So, Mike,
listen, we briefly mentioned the team there. So in terms of any surprises for you, I know we talk about that experience in the case of out with the old, in with the older. Andy Farrell has turned to his experienced guys. You see Peter O'Mahony in there. Caelan Doris has the move in the back row as well. And Keith Earls, I know, I suppose, with Balakoon and Mac Hansen both being unavailable as well, I suppose somewhat has picked themselves. But would you be confident? I know you were full of positive. Or what are you expecting to see from this Ireland team as a unit and indeed as a response? I know it's different personnel. I know it's New Zealand as opposed to the Maori All Blacks as well. But they will want a response concerning what happened midweek.
Yeah, I think he's gone for a cohesive team. Like all these guys have played regularly together before. If you look at the performance on Wednesday with when Ireland played the Maori, a lot of those guys are playing the first team for the first time, or on the green jersey for the first time together, and it showed. You know, there was a bit of a lack of cohesiveness. Some of the kick chase we put in, particularly in the second 20 minutes, which was when the Maori did most of their damage. You know, and that kind of spoke to the guys who weren't used to playing with each other. So, yeah, there's a couple of calls there. You know, Keith Earls, you know, playing another, starting after playing 80 minutes.
80 minutes, yeah.
Yeah. Which is,
you know, are you surprised at that?
No, Earls is very fit.
You know, so, this know, is true. This is true.
But, yeah, look, he's... Earlsey's tremendous experience. He's in there to, you know, do a job and keep the New Zealand contained. And, you know, he's been one of Munster's brighter lights in the last few months. So I have no qualms about that. I guess the other women we might argue the toss is Peter Manny for Jack Conan. But, you know, if you look at, so Peter and Tadhg Byrne, they'll be jackling all day, you know, slowing down the ruck balls. So maybe that's what they've gone for. You know, so,
okay. So that will be the approach on Saturday.
Yeah, so, you know, slow down New Zealand, frustrate the ruck, and then bring Jack Conan on as an impact when you know, the legs are getting a bit tired.
I want to talk about the front row, given your obvious expertise, Mike. And Andy Farrell has said that both Cian Healy and Adib Finlay-Balaam are training to cover both Loosehead and Tighthead. What do you make of that? Because it is, they're such specialist positions themselves. Yet now you have two players who are very vastly experienced at particular roles now crossing over.
Yeah, it is a bit strange, you know. And look, I know Cian very well, and he'll back himself at anything. always, when I was playing, he was always fancying himself a tight end, telling me it was easy and the rest of it. But Cian's 100-odd caps at Loosehead. Finlay has played vast majority of his career at tight end, so I'm not really understanding why you want to swap him around. Except, you know, most of our Looseheads are probably the wrong side of 30, so maybe they're looking at moving Finlay across, you know, because he's been playing well, he's been finishing out games well, so maybe that's something they're looking at. I don't know, but look, I'll wait and see if they actually do come on, if Cian does come on at tight head or Finlay does come on at loose. But
listen, none of us are privy to inside information, but even just judging by the pictures, and Andy Farrell said, listen, we've seen Jeremy Lockman and we've seen a couple of other injuries, but the talk was that Cian Healy was the most serious. He was carted off with that injury. I mean, yes, we can joke and laugh here, say a Lazarus-like recovery, but realistically, can you see him playing against New Zealand, such a physical unit that is New Zealand?
I can, because I know him well. I was texting him earlier, and like he felt he rolled it badly, but you know, sometimes ankles are extremely painful and you go over them, and then a couple of days later, I mean, they'll have all the ice and rest and recovery and all that compression. Sometimes they can come right pretty quickly, but you know, you can take over a lot of the function of the ligaments with strapping.
Yeah.
So he'll probably be heavily strapped. I hope it's not that bad, but yeah, it didn't look great when he went over, and you know, he's not a man to make noise when nothing happens. So we'll see. But the Irish medical and physios are top notch, and I'm sure they wouldn't be putting them on if there was a risk.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Ronan O'Gara was actually up doing a bit of media today, and RT Sports' Michael Glennon was chatting to him. So I do want to get your thoughts on what Ronan was thinking around Saturday's test against New Zealand.
I wouldn't make any correlation between Wednesday's game and Saturday. I think test games are very, very different, and there were some good, I suppose, warnings from Ireland in the fact that you can't give New Zealanders time and space on the ball. That was probably one key learning, and the second one was just how dangerous they are in transition, and so thirdly, their skill levels, even in wet conditions, middle of winter, June, slippy ball, their front five are very comfortable handling. So we got an early, I suppose, snapshot into what you'll see on Saturday on Wednesday from the boys in black. But I think from an Ireland point of view, it's something that can be addressed quickly. But stopping it in real life, it can be difficult, especially in Eden Park if they get their tails up. You have to, I suppose, start fast against New Zealand, and when they become unplayable is when they get confident. But the flip side of that is when you take away their time and space and you put them under pressure and they have new combinations, then there's big opportunity for Ireland.
Put them under pressure, Mike. So, you know, it's all well and good saying that. And yes, there's, I suppose, not much of a correlation between, because considering they are new teams as well. But a fast start, is that what Ireland need to do? Try and get in their faces from the off?
Well, they certainly can't give them a slow start, you know. So the last thing you want to be do is, you know, give New Zealand a few lead and be chasing after them.
Mm.
You know, any time we've beaten New Zealand, we've kept under pressure from the very start and continued it throughout the whole game, never stopped going after them. And that's when you can actually beat them, because if you sit back and leave them run at you, like, they're the best in the world at that.
Mm.
So, like, New Zealand will tell you by their own standards, they've slipped a bit in the last, you know, couple of years or so. But they're back at home, back in Auckland. You know, they're playing against an Irish team who's probably, you know, a little bit low in confidence at the moment. You know, bulk of it's from Leinster, and Leinster, look how Leinster's season finished up. So, you know, they'll be chafing at the bit, because, you know, they're a proud rugby nation, and they think the fact that we even give ourselves a chance to be in the front of them. And I've been down there, and, you know, a lot of the fans wouldn't even know who you were. And I think a lot of that has changed now in recent years, you know, with Ireland beating them, so they're, you know, sitting up and taking notice. But you absolutely have to keep the foot down from the very start and not let it up, because they will break your heart.
Is that a case of respecting Ireland more then, even from the fans, now that we've gotten a couple of wins over them? So it's a case of, oh, these boys can play.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, of course they're not going to respect us. When I was down there, we'd never beaten them. Yeah, but now we have. Now we have a couple of wins, and we pushed them close on other occasions. So now they're starting, oh, look, Ireland can play a bit. And they look at the team they put out. I mean, they're a well-experienced team. You know, that 9-10 pivot of Aaron Smith and Bowden Barrett, you know, pulling the strings. And, you know, like, the old heads at the second row, Brody Reckler and Samuel Whitelock. So it's going to be, you know, certainly tough up front and tough out the back. They have a new cap. I'm not really going to try and pronounce his name.
Lester Fanganuku.
Yeah, he's magnificently named, because his full name is like something like Lester Wales Twickenham Fanganuku. So, like, I wonder what his parents liked, what sport they were into. But, and that actually happens a lot. I noticed a lot when I was reading through programmes before playing in New Zealand that a lot of other players make debuts against us. Like, Richie McCaw's first game for New Zealand was, against Ireland and Dublin.
Mm.
So
it's amazing how it works out.
Yeah.
Well, listen, you mentioned the strength of New Zealand as well. And Caelan Doris was up on media duty, and he was talking specifically about how potent the New Zealand back row are.
Big time, yeah. Three big names, three very experienced players, three top quality players. Obviously, Barry, if you haven't seen too much of him at six recently, he's a big man. Obviously, the leader for Crusaders. Off the back of the success there, so I'm sure confidence will be high. He's playing good rugby this season. Probably weren't expecting him to see him at six, but it'd be exciting going up against him. Obviously Kane as well, squad captain, quality player, really good poacher, nuisance at the breakdown. Heidi Sevilla, pretty much an all-rounder. He's, you know, been at the top of his game for the last number of years, and he's one of the best back rows in the world. So it's definitely an exciting challenge for the lads who get the opportunity to go up against them. I know the two of us are pretty excited anyway. It was the same in the Aviva in November, top quality players. So, yeah, we're going to have to be at our best.
So that was Caelan Doris chatting to Michael Corcoran, who was down in New Zealand ahead of live commentary. So, listen, the New Zealand team, we've gone through it somewhat there. There's three Barretts as well, a good rugby family. We've mentioned the Lester Fanganuku making his New Zealand debut on Saturday, coming onto the left wing to replace his Crusaders teammate Will Jordan, who has COVID-19. The New Zealand squad has continued to be affected by the virus, with scrum coach Greg Feek, the latest to test positive, the former Irish Ireland assistant will be replaced by legendary scrum doctor Mike Cron, who had been involved with the All Blacks for 15 years up until 2019. Blues winger Mark Talia has been called into the wider squad as cover while Will Jordan completes his isolation period as well. Yeah, I was going to ask you about how COVID might affect New Zealand, but then you look at bringing Mike Cron back into the setup, bringing Joe Schmidt into the setup. It's just this conveyor belt of talent on the pitch, but great minds coaching them as well, and it just adds to the aura that is New Zealand All Blacks. I know this debate has been happening before, but we should never really call them the All Blacks. Just call them New Zealand. You know, don't put them on that pedestal. But you see the people that are bringing in. I mean, they're world class.
Yeah, and you know, like Joe Schmidt went out and made his reputation in Europe. You know, and like he stepped in there this week. The other guy, Greg Fico, I know very well from my time. He's out. But as you mentioned, Mike Cron is stepping in there. Like Joe knows us very well, obviously. At the same time, he's been out of the set for 3 years. So things have moved on, but you can still see his legacy in, for instance, how quick our ruck ball is when we get it going and the attention to detail. So, yeah, I hope we won't do too good a job preparing him this week.
What would Joe's immediate influence be? Because obviously you'd know Joe very well.
Look, Joe is very clear communication style. He leaves nobody in any doubt as exactly what they're expected to do and deliver. And there's a bit of comfort in that. You know, that you know, like, this is my job. I need to execute it. And if I do, then the game plan is going to work. So how much he's actually done in terms of, you know, structure or game plan, I don't know.
I feel like he's a man that sits at home doing plenty of homework, even if he's not involved, so wouldn't have any issues slotting
in. I guarantee you there'll be at least one set piece move he'll come up with that'll carve us open. But we'll see after that.
Is there a fear? I know you mentioned at the start, and I suppose it was a bit tongue-in-cheek about trying to continue our positive narrative, but is there a slight fear that defeat against the Maoris, if we take a bit of a heavy defeat on Saturday, that this could be a very long tour for Ireland?
Yeah, I was down there for the last tour in 2012 when the last match we lost 60-0. So it's not. I don't think anything like that's going to happen, you know. But yeah, you have to get off to a good start because you know, for the guys, it's their. I think it might be their 53rd or 54th week of tour. You know, of a season. The season's dragging on really long. Before you'd be finished by like 20th of June. Now we're in the 1st of July, and I don't think they'll be finished until like 20th of July. Mm. So, yeah, the important thing is, you know that whenever I played New Zealand, there was a bit of fear in me because I knew if I didn't get it right, they were going to open us up. You know, okay. And I think that's what drove me. Other players had different motivators, but that, you know, this little bit of fear at the back of your mind that if I don't play to the utmost of my ability, it's going to be a very, very long day.
Well, was that negative for you, or did you use that as more of a motivating factor?
It was a motivating factor. Like, I mean, some people wouldn't have that at all. You know, they were looking that forward. But for me, it was a motivating factor. I knew that I had to get everything right. It kind of kept me honest, you know, that like I didn't take anything for granted because I knew if you don't get everything exactly right, then, you know, they're going to rip you to shreds, even if you're off in a few percent. I still think of that game in 2013 we played where we're leading for, you know, 79 minutes and 50 seconds, you know, and still disagree with the penalty decision. But anyway.
as many others.
Yeah. But that just, you know, it kind of hammers home, you know, how good New Zealand are, especially at home. You know, they don't lose very often. I don't remember the last time they lost at home, actually.
Getting into the mindset, though, because that's something that always intrigues me, looking on as someone who's never played professional sport. You say that you had that bit of fear. Would you have shared those thoughts with teammates or with management or with anyone, or would you have kept that to yourself? Like, in terms of, I say sharing the problem, in terms of how to combat it or how to go against that then?
No, I wouldn't have shared that. I mean, because people's motivation is personal.
Okay.
You know, so some people are motivated by, you know, pride. Other people are motivated by, I want to do as well as I can for my family. It's different, you know. But, you know, whenever I went out there, I always wanted to just do myself justice. And especially, you know, with New Zealand, I mean, they can make you look silly very quickly.
Sticking, I suppose, on the mentality narrative, because you mentioned there a couple of the Leinster boys, obviously, who would have had a bit of disappointment with Leinster, of course, and now going into this, and you have the disappointment of the Maori All Black. How big of a challenge is it getting yourself mentally prepared as well as making sure you're ready for this physical battle?
Well, you look what's coming at you on Saturday, and you know, I don't think there's any challenge in getting yourself motivated and ready for the match. You know, again, it comes back to, if you don't, you're going to be feeling even worse after it, you know. So
yeah,
you kind of, rugby players are sports players in general, are good at compartmentalizing. So they'll take that disappointment, they'll shove it into a little box, and they'll worry about that later on, you know, because you have a test match against New Zealand in their backyard in front of you. So you have nothing else to worry about or think about except that.
Okay. Well, listen, Mike, it should be a fascinating encounter, and hopefully that we are chatting across more of the Tour Down Under, and hopefully we'll have a bit of more positivity talk about. Hopefully we'll be chatting after an Ireland victory on Saturday, but we shall wait and see. As I mentioned there, you can listen to a live commentary of Ireland versus New Zealand here on 2FM with Michael Corcoran and Donal Lenihan. Mike Ross, thank you very much. Pleasure chatting. We are going to be turning our attention after the break to basketball. I'll be chatting to new captain Sean Flood, so do stay tuned.
RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's newest chicken and turkey range is full of B vitamins, which play a vital role in maintaining good health and well-being. Available in store now.
Game on 2FM.
So it is a pivotal few days coming up for Irish basketball, starting with Austria in Salzburg this evening. And when I say this evening, in about 25 minutes' time, it's actually tipping off. And then Ireland welcomes Switzerland to a sold-out National Basketball Arena in Dublin on Sunday. Two matches that will decide whether or not Ireland progress in qualification. So, just to round it up, before we hear from standing captain Sean Flood, Ireland had back-to-back wins over Cyprus, so still very much in the hunt to move on to round two of the pre-qualifiers, despite losing to Austria and Switzerland last winter. So in terms of standings, Ireland are third, 1 point behind both of the aforementioned teams in the Group A table, ahead of the final round of games, with top spot in the group up for grabs depending on these results. The group winners and the two best second place finishers from three groups will advance to round two of the qualifiers, which begin in August with another two game match day window in November. So as you process all of that information, sit back and listen to the dulcet tones of standing captain for Ireland, Sean Flood. And I began the conversation a little bit earlier on, referencing the last time Ireland played Austria. It ended in a 97-70 defeat. So what will Ireland be looking to do differently this time round?
I think probably play 40 minutes of basketball would probably be the message. Like, I think when we played Austria there at home, I think we're down 4 at halftime after probably starting the game poorly and putting a good spell together to end the first quarter and then a good second quarter. So to go down 4 at halftime was big. I think we came out second half then and they just kind of probably stepped it up a little bit and we kind of dropped our level. So I think if we can string 40 minutes of basketball together, we could be right there in contention and kind of make them win the game down the stretch as opposed to just kind of handling on the game.
What are you expecting from this Austrian team? Because I know, I suppose, any casual viewers tuning in this evening will see, well, they have a man playing in the NBA. So is it a case of just trying to keep him quiet, or they have so many other threats that you'll be need to be aware of?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, they're a very talented team. A lot of players playing high level across Europe, as well as obviously Jakupoto playing in the NBA. So, yeah, it's not just a case of Keenan on one guy. They'll be very big, very physical. And then their guard play is quite good as well. They've got some players playing in European competitions, in the Euro Cup and stuff like that. So it'll be kind of a case of keying in on multiple players as opposed to just the one guy.
In terms of leadership for Ireland, so there has been a lot of change. For those that aren't aware, former captain Carl Hosford surprised a lot of people when he announced his international retirement. So that meant John Carroll stepped up from vice-captain to captain. However, John has now sadly suffered an ACL injury, ruling him out to late next year, I think. So you've been thrown in as captain now. Have you had time to digest it all? And how proud of a moment in your career is this for you personally?
Yeah, hugely proud. But obviously, I said yesterday, chatting to Robbie from Basketball Ireland, that obviously I wish it was in different circumstances. I'd much rather have John here doing his job and kind of just the safety of having John as well. He's a fantastic player. He's a big personality for us, both on and off the court. So I'd rather have John here. But flipping the page, it is a very proud moment for me in what I think to consider a fairly young basketball career. So yeah, I welcome the challenge and welcome kind of being that vocal leader now on the team. So no, it's a proud moment for myself.
Has it been difficult then? You mentioned those circumstances, because I'm sure team morale is dented somewhat when any player suffers a serious injury, just like John has, particularly when the injury occurs in training, when you guys are already together and there's a close bond when you're preparing for such important matches.
Yeah, I think the initial fear when John went down was this, like, speaking for myself, my initial fear was, is it his ACL, because he had done it previously. So that was kind of the initial fear, but then kind of progressed a little bit and we got news that it wasn't going to be the ACL. So it was kind of, we were fearing then, like, okay, maybe best case scenario be meniscus or MCL sprain. So that's what we were kind of hoping for then. But then when the MRI did come back with the ACL, it kind of took the wind out of sail again for a few minutes then, like it kind of shocked everyone and yeah, definitely dampened the mood for a little bit. But I think we've done a good job kind of lifting spirits then, kind of saying, right, it's next man up. And Jim Gormley came in then, he was ready to go. But yeah, obviously, as I said earlier, it would have been great to have John here, both for a leadership standpoint, but also as he's a great player. Like,
in terms of regrouping then, because I know head coach Mark Keenan has described yourself as a natural leader, likewise the new vice-captain Adrian O'Sullivan. So how close is this group as a whole?
Yeah, we're really close. So I think we were very fortunate last year to have spent time in a bubble situation for the small countries where most of this group was together for an extended period of time in the Louis Fitz, kind of not able to leave or anything. So it was good for bonding in terms of that. So we were quite a close group. Everyone gets on well. But then in terms of stepping up as leadership, everyone does their bit. So yeah, me and Adrian might have that like that title. But I think it's kind of leadership by committee at the moment. Everyone. And even when John was here, it's kind of everyone says their bit, everyone respects what other people have to say. So, our group is good. We were able to knit it back together quite quickly. And I think everyone just kind of welcomes the challenge that's ahead now for the next two games.
Do you feel there's the right blend between perhaps experience and fresh faces? You see the likes of Aiden making a national debut, CJ and Will making Eurobasket debuts as well. Has Mark Keenan found that perfect mix?
Yeah, definitely. I think we're quite a young team in terms of everything and the overall scheme of things. But yeah, we have a good mix of youth and experience. Like obviously Aiden and CJ, young college players coming in, but bringing a vast knowledge of the game from a good underage career. And then Will has just a basketball CV that not many can rival. Like, he's a basketball Champions League winner. So anytime you can have him come into a group and just kind of steady things is a fantastic thing for us. So yeah, the mix is great. And I think, yeah, we'll be good for the years to come also.
It's been mentioned across a few other interviews that this is the most talented group of basketballers to represent Ireland in quite some time. So if that belief is there, there must be very high expectations within the group as a result.
Yeah, absolutely. I might be biased in saying that this is probably the most talented and probably the best national team that we've been able to put together since probably a year allowed to have a number of Irish Americans. So it's very promising for Irish basketball players coming behind us as well to see that this is the level that we can get to. And I think probably in years to come, we can push on and then probably teams in the future will be saying that, well, this is the most talented group we've had. So I think we're trying to set that benchmark for now and obviously keep raising the standard. But yeah, I would definitely agree that this is probably the strongest and most talented group we've had in a long, long time.
Well, hopefully you'll be all acting as role models for future generations. So massive few days, as I said. It starts this evening in Salzburg with the challenge of Austria before Switzerland in Tala. So listen, Sean Flood, the very best of luck this evening and indeed on Sunday as captain and to the whole team. I'm sure we'll be chatting again. And hopefully we will be chatting after two wins for Ireland. So thank you genuinely for taking the time out of match day preparation to talk. I really appreciate it.
No worries. Cheers, Shane.
So they are the thoughts of Sean Flood. And if you're interested in watching this evening's match, you can do so live in TG Cahir. 7:05, the coverage begins. And then on Sunday, unfortunately, you can't attend the match because it is sold out, which I suppose is good news. We see the appetite for basketball and for fans of hockey as well. I have some good news because Ireland's games against Chile and Germany in the pool stages of the Women's Hockey World Cup will be broadcast live on the RT News channel. Sean Dancer's side are in Amsterdam for the initial stage of the tournament and will face world number one side Netherlands in their opening game on Saturday. You can see live updates of that encounter on the RT Sport website or on the RT News app. Ireland will then face Chile on Tuesday at 1 p.m. before completing their Pool A campaign against Germany on Wednesday at 5:30. So RT News channel the place for those hockey matches. Stay with us here on Game On, because still to come, I'll be chatting to Jonathan Tormey, who is FAI Development Officer, who is recently back from the UEFA Unity Euro Cup. So he will be telling us all about that and much, much more. So do stay tuned.
RTE 2FM.
Game On.
On 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new added benefits range is enriched with all your B vitamins, which are essential for your health and well-being. Available in store now.
Game On.
Football.
Now, the Republic of Ireland finished in sixth place in the inaugural UEFA Unity Euro Cup, which was in partnership with the UN Refugee Agency to promote refugee inclusion. The tournament saw eight teams made up of refugee and local players compete at UEFA headquarters in Switzerland. The collaboration between the Football Association of Ireland and Tusla, particularly in the Ringsend area of Dublin, was a major factor in Ireland's selection as one of the competing nations. Ireland were drawn in Group A and kicked off with a 5-0 victory over Austria. A narrow 2-1 defeat at the hands of Switzerland was followed by a 2-0 loss to France, and the final match saw Ireland finish sixth with a defeat to Malta. Ireland men's national team manager Stephen Kenny was an ambassador for the event and indeed praised the experience for all involved. And I'm delighted to say that FAI Development Officer Jonathan Tormey now joins me now. And Jonathan, by all accounts, it just seems like an absolutely fantastic event, and it was great that Ireland were included.
Yeah, no, good evening, and thanks very much, obviously, for having me on. It was an absolute fabulous tournament. It was experience. It was unbelievable. The friendships that were made. Obviously, we went over to play in a tournament, and we wanted to win it. We weren't coming over just to make up numbers, but at the end of the day, it wasn't about that. It was about lads getting the chance and girls getting the chance that might never ever get this chance again to represent Ireland and obviously their countries of origin, and we're the green, and it was unbelievable in to play in the headquarters of UEFA, and as a visual, it was unbelievable. The football was excellent, but the friendships that were made were they're lifelong friendships that are going to last forever.
I know you've been involved with working with young people in Dublin and in Ringsend for, what, I think about 15, 16 years now, and you've been instrumental in the work and many young people in the community. And you know, you've been coaching the team with Ireland manager Stephen Kenny, travelling as the official Irish ambassador, but I know Mick Byrne of Tusla does such good work as well. How did you come upon the players? Or how was the team put together, and how was it all integrated together?
Yeah, well, I've been lucky enough to be working with the FAI for 17 years, and with Tusla, we've been partnering up for the last 15 years. And what we've done is we create camps, so we deliver football camps, and the main objection of them camps are, you know, to integrate lads and girls coming over from Sudan, Somalia, Afghanistan, and all other countries, obviously, seeking refuge here. And we deliver a program, and then we try to integrate them into the local community. So local clubs, ideally, obviously, in Ringsend, but some of the players obviously aren't from Ringsend, they're from all around Dublin. But we try to link them into local clubs that are close to where they're staying. The team itself obviously came together from lads and girls who have played and taken part in camps. So the selection process was a hard process. It was a real eye-opener, I think, for ourselves, the FAI, make himself and Tuesday in regards to paperwork and trying to get the paperwork to allow the players actually to travel to Switzerland. But it came together. It took a long time. It took a long time to get everything together. We were lucky enough to meet up a couple of weeks prior to the tournament. We would have loved to have more time as a team to prepare and go over. But obviously taking part was the main thing and travelling over. And obviously the idea behind it, you know, integration. We had three Irish players involved. And they have made friends for life with the players that have travelled over. And even some of the life stories that we've been lucky enough to hear from the players, you know, it's a testament to their resilience. It's a testament to their, you know, just their desire to play football and be part of something. And I've never seen so many players smile so much through the whole time that we've been there. It was just phenomenal.
I know you'd be recounting stories on behalf of other people, but would you be able to share any of those stories, particularly of ones perhaps you heard and stories that touched you with this Irish team?
Yeah, of course. I mean, we were lucky enough to sit down with Stephen and ourselves. And I mean, I know Stephen came over as an ambassador, but he was more than an ambassador. I just want to make that clear. You know, he was more than an ambassador. He took time out to listen to every single one of the players, the stories. He sat down, gave them advice on playing football. So as much as he came over as an ambassador, I think by the end of it, he actually made friends. And the players felt like he was one of the team, which was unbelievable. But just in regards, obviously, some of the players that travelled, a couple of them have done interviews in particular. But, I mean, one story was obviously Inza, a young lad, 15 years of age, travelling from Ivory Coast. His story of getting to Ireland is just unbelievable. You know, he spent a week when he was age 15 in the Mediterranean Sea. I mean, I know for anybody listening who has a 14, 15-year-old, that's just uncomprehendable. You know, you just can't imagine what they've gone through. But for him alone, I made him captain for the first match. He never stopped smiling from the minute he got on the plane till we finished up the tournament. He finished with 5 goals. One of my questions to him at the end of it was, would you like to do this again? And the grin on his face and what it meant to him was just unbelievable. And his story, his resilience, how he's come back. And, you know, it's just phenomenal. It's just a phenomenal story. And, you know, and to be over there with so many young people and young players who've gone through very similar stories, still going through some similar stories in regards trying to get their own families over. You know, some of them haven't seen the families in probably 3 or 4 years, where we would take that for granted, seeing them on a daily basis. They haven't seen them in 4 years, you know. And again, I think for Stephen and ourselves, as staff travelling over, it was a real eye-opener. We knew, obviously, they came from difficult backgrounds, but it was a real eye-opener to, you know, how lucky we have it, but how we can provide for these players. How we're providing a tool and a pathway, and one of the things was said on a daily basis was how football is the language of the world. You know, people understand through football, and I think that's what brought us together, and that's what's going to continue to bring us together, and hopefully going forward we can do this on an annual basis.
Absolutely. Well, listen, that is absolutely magic. You know what I mean? That sincerely, Jonathan. Unfortunately, time is against us, but that really does,
yeah.
I suppose, speak of the character of yourself, Stephen Kenny as well. And speaking of integration, I think we have to mention Intercultural Department Officer led by Des Tomlinson as well. So listen, it was a truly magnificent event. It seems by all accounts a hugely successful event. And as you say, hopefully this can be an annual event, and we will continue to send players over there because there's some brilliant stories, and I'm sure there's much, much more. But unfortunately, that is where we have to end the conversation. But FEI Development Officer Jonathan Tormey, thank you very much. That is all we have time for on this evening's Game On, I should say. I'll be back tomorrow from 6 o'clock.